This podcast was recorded at Hartford Street Zen Center, Isanji, in San Francisco. Please help support our temple by making a donation at hscc.org.
I was away on my recent travels. Not surprisingly, I encountered birth and death wherever I went. And generally speaking, things were more similar the way they are here than different, with some obvious exceptions, and as I've said before, with the distinction that we're in kind of a heaven realm here compared to so many other people. So that was a pretty obvious difference, and yet people seem to be practicing with or dealing with the same sorts of stuff that we deal with. Among Buddha's great discoveries, of course, was that there's an intrinsic imbalance in the life of the sentient being that he called dukkha, or unease. And it's not an accident that this was the first of the so-called noble truths. And I think it's the first because it really is it's something that needs to be acknowledged before we can begin to investigate the remarkable possibilities of our human situation. Uh, without that acknowledgement, we may still be laboring under the fantasy that there's something we can fix that will make everything work the way we want. And since this is sort of the, you might say, the root delusion, or one expression of it, it's the first thing that has to be acknowledged with the body. So, of course, all of us have periods in our life where things maybe feel particularly difficult or challenging. And the other temptation is to assume that because of this intrinsic imbalance, there are no possibilities for the human spirit. That's falling on the other side. So one way is kind of to invent a sort of fantasy land. And the other way is to invent a kind of hell realm. And Buddhist teaching is about, as Dogen put it, leaping free of those. So the first step is to acknowledge, okay, something's a little off. My attempts to have the perfect life have always missed the mark somehow. Sometimes by just a little, sometimes by a lot. And why is that? Of course, this was the question that sent Buddha on his journey. Recently I've been in China and Tibet, and also another foreign country, Oregon. Which was it's a lovely place up there, very, very beautiful countryside. And I was staying at this monastery, Great Vow Monastery, which some of you have heard of. And one of the activities we had was we did what I think they call the Ceremony of Vows, and it's kind of funny. They have set up a place where they call it the Shrine of Vows, and everyone who wants to, they go up the steps onto the shrine and they stand there. It's like a stage. And then they address everyone else, and they announce their vow, whatever their vow happens to be. And everyone has been given a little bell. So when each person announces his or her vow, everybody rings their little bell. And then they have an old railroad bell or something up there on the shrine, and once you've recited your vow, you go and yank on the rope and ring this railroad bell. The next person comes up. So we had this little ceremony, and see, my vow was, I think I said, I vow not to allow my own self-pride, self-love, and self-confusion to injure others. This was my vow. Everybody rang a little bell. And then afterwards, the abbot up there said a few words and reminded us about the complete perfection of this universe. From one end to the other, if there are indeed ends, there is perfection. And I thought, that's very interesting. Of course, we've heard this before. It's kind of a Zen thing. I don't remember that Shakyamuni Buddha spoke in quite that way. But he could have, I guess, if he wanted to. So I was kind of turning that teaching for quite some while thereafter, because I wasn't necessarily feeling that way. Not necessarily feeling that it was such a perfect universe. And of course, I was reminded finally that it's not a matter of feeling. It's not that things either feel perfect or don't. Dogen, of course, has a very famous essay about this in his collection of essays. And that essay is called The Bright Pearl. He tells the story of these two characters. Great Tang Dynasty teacher, Xue Feng, and his student, Xuanzha. And Xuanzha goes to his teacher, Xue Feng, and says, I heard this teaching, and I don't understand it. So I'd like your help, please, teacher. And Xue Feng says, well, what teaching is that? And Xuanzha says, the entire universe in 10 directions is one bright pearl. I don't understand. So Xue Feng says, the entire universe in 10 directions is one bright pearl. What does understanding have to do with it? The next day, it says, the teacher, Xue Feng, snuck up on Xuanzha and pounced on him and said, the entire universe in 10 directions is one bright pearl. How do you understand? And Xuanzha, with a beaming smile, said, the entire universe in 10 directions is one bright pearl. What does understanding have to do with it? And Xue Feng approved. Dogen very aptly calls this riding the thief's horse to catch the thief. So, again, I don't think Shakyamuni Buddha didn't say the entire universe in 10 directions is one bright pearl. And yet we have this teaching. And we also have the teaching of omnipresent dukkha. So we somehow, I would say, have to reconcile those teachings in our body and it will not be a matter of understanding. So, how does that happen? Dogen says that there's a time when the jewel is given by a close friend when you are intoxicated with wine. And then he adds, to a close friend, the jewel should be given. So this means that someone sneaks up on us and gives us the jewel in the midst of our intoxication. It could be our intoxication with greed, hate, and delusion. Or it could be our intoxication with delight in this universe. But it's basically guaranteed that a close friend will give us this jewel. And then we, in turn, will give this jewel to a close friend. And the jewel is the whole universe in 10 directions is a bright pearl. Dogen also says, in this house, he says, we don't hang the jewel under the chin. He says it's in the clothing somewhere. We don't walk around with the jewel hanging from our chin. For this reason, we might forget even that we've been given this jewel. Like that guy in the Lotus Sutra, who has forgotten his parentage. But I think because of the teachings of the Buddhas and ancestors, you can be pretty confident that a close friend has given you this jewel. And maybe you were intoxicated, so you didn't notice it at the time. But it's in your clothing. So you are walking around with this bright pearl in your clothing, ready at a moment's notice to give it to a close friend. And that doesn't mean necessarily you're going to announce, "Hello, close friend, I have a jewel for you here." That's probably not what is meant. what is meant is that your, or our body-mind practice of the bright jewel is available to everyone. And without thinking about it, even, you will share this with your close friend. This impossibly bright jewel. This impossibly vast universe. So rest assured that you needn't seek understanding. Rest assured that there will always be moments when the jewel is given to your close friend. This jewel is such that it includes and illuminates Buddha's teaching about dukkha. How do the omnipresence of dukkha and the whole universe as a bright pearl, where do they meet? Well, only in this body mind, nowhere else. Simply sharing this bright jewel with your close friend is, as Dogen also says, it's an everyday affair. But it's usually also recommended that very likely our thinking mind will seek, will start nibbling away at it, at this this remarkable teaching, start to try to sink its teeth into it and gather some understanding. So to kind of counterbalance that tendency, we have a practice of sitting still. Where we let the jewel be the jewel. We let the universe be the universe. We let ourselves be ourselves, and our close friend be our close friend. That is the moment of the jewel being handed along warm hand to warm hand, as they say. So I hope you will all continue to have confidence in that practice. The bright pearl in the 10 directions does not need your understanding. It's quite remarkable, really. Perhaps you can sense what I'm getting at. So when our life is painful, we bring forth this jewel of a teaching and contemplate it. Without, necessarily accepting or rejecting. Just allow the jewel to turn in the light of what is happening right now. That way, wherever you go, things will be somehow familiar. And of course, the jewel travels with you wherever you go. I don't know, maybe that wasn't very useful talk, but that's what it was. So perhaps you have some question. Yes?
I had a comment that just some stuff that came up when you were speaking. So I immediately thought when you said something about sinking your teeth into it, that even sitting still and letting the jewel do its thing, seems like it, even that has some teeth to it. When you originally said something about the pearl, the first thought that came to my mind was, it's a cultured pearl with a grain of sand intentionally placed, but still naturally created. Maybe it could be way off and too much manipulation there, but I thought there's some effort required.
Necessarily. Who do you think placed this, that grain of sand? Maybe so. Yeah, in a way, saying the entire universe in 10 directions is a bright pearl is itself a grain of sand. And Buddha's teaching course is then that we're all oysters. all generating joules. It works. That's right, the walrus ate all the oysters. So he did. Yes.
To use the same analogy, I think maybe dukkha is that grain of sand. Because I think with oysters, that grain of sand is initially like some sort of irritant.
An irritant, yeah.
And so I think most people, there has to be some dukkha for people to eventually come to the great pearl. That seems to be a motivator.
Yeah, they do say that the big difficulty of the heaven realms is dukkha is so faint there that there is virtually no irritation. So we'll just hang out. The teaching actually is, even in the heaven realms, there is some dukkha, but it is so attenuated that it's very easily overlooked. But I think that's right. Most of us need a little, a burr under our saddle. That's right. Sangha is an enormous community of close friends.
And sometimes you burn under the sun.
Yeah. Yes, indeed. Quite a while ago, a then student of mine asked me, or said, "You don't really have a plan, do you?" I said, "No, actually, I don't have a plan." This did not please that person, because the person evidently thought I had a plan. So I, most of the time, I don't know what to do. You know, beyond maybe something that's right under my nose, I don't know what to do. So if people think there's something they want me to do, they should please tell me, because I may not have a clue. So if people need something or want me to do something, please let me know somehow or other. Email, text, a little note under my Zafu, I don't know, anything. But help me out that way.
Good luck with your career in Hollywood.
Yeah, it sounds like him. So next week we start our study period, the first one since 1995. So I don't really have a plan. We have a sort of a structure, and people can plug into that structure anytime, in any way that works for them. One way, of course, there's a very formal way of doing a study period where you make everybody sign on the dotted line and that they're going to do this, this, and this, and this, but and we're not doing that. We're doing the way where more like the ceremony of vows where people say, I'm going to do such and such. Mm-hmm. That's enough. Ding-a-ling-ling. That's fine. So I'm going to come to Zazen once a week. It's like, yes, all right, good. And we'll have a head student, head monk, David Bullock, who is here today, but will be back tomorrow. So we'll have a ceremony for inviting the Shuso's entry. Shuso's the head student. And then somewhere around the end of the study period, we'll have a Shuso ceremony where you get to ask the Shuso questions. So there'll be some fun stuff to do. You're all invited, as always. Thank you very much.
May our intention equally extend to every being and place with the true merit of Buddha's way. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless.